Hello there, Inklings, Octlings, and whatever other sea creatures you may identify as. My name is K-Bont, and welcome to this week's episode of The Weekly Splat, where I discuss some of the news and happenings in the competitive Splatoon scene in the past week. We've got a lot to cover this week, from the normal tournament and Ludi results to previewing the Inkstorm Cup and beyond, and I'll finish it out with a special guest to talk about one of the most rapidly growing tournaments right now. So, let's get into it, shall we? This past week featured a wide variety of different tournaments, so let's go day by day and hit the big ones. Last Thursday, Bleck and Spoon's Season 5 kicked off with 37 participating teams, where Neptune came back from the dead to beat Licensed Krill in Splat Zones for the majority of the $358 prize pool. I'll talk a little more about BNS later, so stay tuned for that. Casual Fridays 20 occurred last Friday, featuring 19 participating teams, which resulted in Nexus beating Memes R Us in the finals. Fresh Start Cup came back for their second day of competition last Saturday, where Static Intelligence and Sleepy Warriors clinched their spots into the new Teams International Cup this coming Saturday, July 14th, featuring newer, inexperienced teams from all around the globe. Sendao and company ran Potpourri Cup 2, where Amaterasu took first place over Moon and company, the remains of the French giant Rising Moon. And lastly, week 2 was a quiet week in Ludi's X Division, where only two matches were played. Last week, Kraken Paradise beat Amaterasu 5-3, and Prophecy beat Resin 5-4. We'll be looking forward to see what the rest of Ludi's top division has to offer in the coming weeks. Last week, the Splatoon ratings team at Splatstats released their first ratings for their Season 4, running for the summer months of this year. So, your top 10 teams of Splatoon for the month of June that have met the 40-game minimum are in 10th, Prophecy, in 9th, Amaterasu, in 8th, Oblivion, in 7th, Rising Moon, in 6th, Phantom, in 5th, Smile, in 4th, Orcs GP Black, in 3rd, Deep Blues, in 2nd, Chikara, and in 1st, Tomo. Note that teams like Kraken Paradise, Set to Destroy X, and Ghost Gaming have not yet met the 40-game minimum requirement to be included in these rankings in particular. If you'd like to see where your favorite team stacks up for the month of June, including those teams that haven't yet met that requirement, you can go to tinyurl.com/season4int. However, Splatstats also unveiled their new power rankings, which are cumulative starting from Season 3, which is starting in March of this year, through now. So, the top 10 teams in the West, as they've been counted starting from March of this year, are in 10th, Oblivion, in 9th, Orcs GP Black, in 8th, Phantom, in 7th, Pandora, in 6th, Deep Blues, in 5th, Set to Destroy X, in 4th, Ghost Gaming, in 3rd, Chikara, in 2nd, Tomo, and lastly, but clearly not least, in 1st, Kraken Paradise. Again, it's always best to take these rankings with a grain of salt. Just because one team is listed lower on the rankings doesn't necessarily mean that they are worse than some of the others above them. These rankings are based on pure data and equations alone. If you have any questions about these rankings, you can try directing them to me first on Twitter, and if that doesn't work, you can join the Splatstats Discord and ask away to your heart's content, which will be linked below. If you want a more detailed look at the power rankings, you can visit tinyurl.com/splatoonpowerrankings. This coming weekend, on July 14th and 15th, Endgame TV will host the Inkstorm Cup. As you've heard me mention on the past two episodes, the top two teams from this event will be flown to Tokyo to face the top two teams out of the Splat Japan League in Platinum Cup 4. Out of 67 teams, who will represent the West in Japan? Likely candidates are Set to Destroy X and Ghost Gaming, who are currently sitting at the top of the top 32 bracket. But who will join them on Sunday and challenge them for their trip? Well, there are a few teams to keep your eye on as you watch this weekend. Kraken Paradise has the potential to make some serious waves in this tournament. They've been known to do well under high-pressure situations in the past. Could this be another time for them to steal the spotlight? Amaterasu has been on the come-up lately, and they're looking to take even more names in this tournament. Is this their time to shine? Due to 16 being the minimum player age limit for this tournament, some of the more well-known North American teams will not be competing this weekend. However, players from those teams have taken it upon themselves to form a few pickup squads. Take a look at FT Win, or For the Win, featuring Shaq from Saikai, Kyo and Toon from Tomo, and Ice, who has subbed for STDX in the past, as well as Team Burrito, featuring NA Splatling player Gamer, alongside Kronos, Kaito, and Wadzum of the European team Pandora. Do these teams have the synergy to knock off their rivals? And of course, there's always a potential for a dark horse underdog story. Could teams on the come up, such as Deep Blues, Komodo, Prophecy, Synergy, or even Gemini, make a run on Sunday? You can tune in to the Inkstorm Cup on twitch.tv/endgametv1 this Saturday and Sunday, July 14th and 15th at noon EDT. Once the tournament is over, let me know what your favorite part of it was by sending me a voice message through the Anchor smartphone app or by emailing ikafeedsplat@gmail.com. Of course, the Inkstorm Cup is only half of the Platinum Cup 4 equation. The other two contenders in the Platinum Cup will be chosen via the Splat Japan League. Here's how it works. The SJL is currently a premier league running in Japan featuring some of their biggest talent. The winners of each league season, 0 through 2, are invited to play in a playoff tournament along with a wildcard spot given to the second place team with the highest win rate. The top two teams out of these four will qualify to move on to the Platinum Cup. Already in this playoff are Meteor and GG Boys from winning seasons 0 and 1, respectively. Because Season 0's second place team A-Step has already waived their wildcard eligibility, the only wildcard eligible team from a past season is Liblint Calamari, who finished Season 1 with a 50% match win rate and a 53% game win rate. With all that out of the way, here are the standings of the SJL's second season after day 9 of 11. Currently in last with two matches left to play, the GG Boys with a record of 3-5. Currently in fifth with zero matches left to play, UU with a record of 4-6. Currently in fourth with one match left to play, Cool and Cool with a record of 4-5. Currently in third with two matches left to play, Meteor with a record of 4-4. Currently in second with two matches left to play, Liblint Calamari with a record of 5-3. And currently in first with three matches left to play, Enforce with a record of 5-2. If the league continues to progress as pretty much expected, it should be Enforce and Liblint joining the Platinum Cup playoff. The final 2 days of the Splat Japan League's second season take place on the 17th and the 18th. The Platinum Cup qualifier playoffs will be held on July 22nd. I'll be keeping a close eye on the last 2 days of competition in this season over on the IkaFeed Twitter account, so be sure to check that out. And of course, if you're not interested in waking up early in the morning to watch the final few league games, I'll have the recap on this show next week. To find out more about the Splat Japan League, you can visit league.splat.jp. For a more detailed look at playoff scenarios, be sure to check my personal Twitter account for a nifty little diagram that I created featuring all of the possible outcomes for the final 2 days of league competition. Special thanks for this segment go out to Ganba Wumi and Best Team Maker of the Splatstats team for helping me digest all of this information. Be sure to check out Ganba Wumi on Twitter for her daily SJL recaps, and be sure to visit the Splatstats Discord for any questions on the league. For our last segment today, I was able to catch up with InkTV's very own Bleck to talk a little bit about InkTV's flagship tournament series, Bleck and Spoon. Have a listen to what the man behind the scenes has to say about the tournament series that has recently blown up. So Bleck, thanks for joining me today.
No problem.
So what exactly is... I mean, obviously we've had Bleck and Spoon kind of take off recently. Just you guys keep getting over 40 entrants almost every week recently. So I guess my first question is, what was the primary goal when you first started running these Bleck and Spoon events, particularly like with the seasons, and I'm talking about in Splatoon 2, and why do you continue to do so?
All right. Well, one of the primary reasons we started BNS again in Splatoon 2 was because people wouldn't stop bugging us after we stopped doing it in Splatoon 1. We were getting a constant feedback just saying, bring back BNS. When's BNS coming back? BNS win. So we brought back BNS. Because one of the main drivers that we had in the original BNS is we wanted to make a tournament that we most wanted to play in. So that is still true as much today as it was then, but the flavor of how that goes about is very different now. Because before, the meta was all about quick respawn, so we took out quick respawn, and then we thought to ourselves, all right, what are players going to do now that they can't use quick respawn? They'll just go to the next immediate cheese, which is a lot of Krakens or a lot of bubblers. So we nixed those down to one, and that was essentially our core rule set, to just force players to think a bit more outside the box and create a more fun tournament that way. So the same is basically true whenever we went in for Splatoon 2, except we didn't have the same kind of issues we had in Splatoon 1 with dealing with specials or abilities. This time around is a lot more to do with just the sheer volume of maps and modes that were coming out, especially once Clan Bliss was released and really expanded just how much variety there is now in Splatoon 2. So we originally narrowed it down to just a few select maps, and the idea was you'd grind through the same maps every week for 4 weeks in a month, or 5 weeks if there were five Thursdays in that particular month. And then we transitioned from having the overhead of deciding when and what to do with those maps to just follow what Nintendo does for the ranked X rotation maps. The idea being that if you're not playing in BNS or you're not playing in a scrim, you're not practicing those particular maps for that set, you can do solo queue, and you're getting the same level of practice, that same level of exposure on those particular maps and modes. So you're constantly practicing and grinding on a smaller set of maps. So we felt that was more carrying in the spirit than just having the same four maps for an entire month.
Okay. So what do you think, like, what attracts InkTV to running BNS specifically, as opposed to something maybe larger or more grandiose than a Thursday night, like late hour, late night, prime time tournament?
Yeah. So this largely the reason why we do BNS in that time slot is the fact that that's when I know I myself am always available. I am always available after 7 p.m. my time until late in the evening. That's usually whenever, before even starting BNS, back when I was a competitive player, that's when I would play Splatoon anyway. So that was just like a nice free block. And this is largely because I have a full-time job outside of anything Splatoon related, in addition to having a toddler. So weekdays and weekends are kind of nixed, which essentially just leaves a nice little block of weeknights. And the reason for Thursday was more because Spoon simply can't make Friday nights. So that's just entirely out of the question. So the next best thing, Thursday nights.
Fair enough.
And that's essentially why.
So why do you guys stick to this one mode per week schedule? And do you ever think, like, in the long run, it's going to get stale or boring? And do you anticipate maybe switching off of that one mode per week?
The way I have always approached BNS, given that it's a weekly and we do make subtle changes throughout the course of its run, like we've already made several changes even the last couple of weeks in just tournament format, we almost always respond to how the stats, quote unquote, look. So if we start saying that, all right, well, numbers are tanking, we'll change something. Whereas the inverse is kind of happening. We seem to be finding our stride and doing what's right, and players are responding to that, even if they'd probably prefer, in many cases. Like, I think before we started having prize pools, our biggest surge in attendance was whenever we did full mixed modes, which is, of course, a little bit of an eye-opener. It's like, all right, well, maybe they're not so keen on the grind. But at the same time, it's kind of, you know, your time to get in with a whole bunch of other competitive teams and basically have a speed scrim session.
What is this? Like a speed dating service?
Exactly.
Is this the Bleck and Spoon dating service?
Exactly, but no romantic feelings whatsoever. It's purely platonic. speed friendships.
There we go. Speed friendships.
But yeah, that was a big thing that we wanted to move forward because, again, with the larger map pools, we were seeing a lot of teams like just kind of floundering on some maps, especially in things whenever we would do squid boards or whenever we did Young Ink. We were seeing a trend of whenever like a more obscure map that wasn't played as often would come up or would be like show up once or twice maybe in an entire tournament, teams just kind of floundered in it. They didn't seem to have that same kind of step and grind on more individual maps. Like, I think something that really stuck out was teams were on whole very good at humpback zones, but teams were not very good at moray zones. So
wonder why.
If you have the full spectrum, you'll have teams that really, like two evenly matched teams, really duke it out and get really close on humpback, and then a bit later in that same set you'll get, you know, moray zones, and it's like an entirely different animal. And we were noticing that trend was happening more and more in various other cases. So we just wanted to shift that direction and give that option of doing something else.
Interesting. Okay. So I know you've kind of already touched on this here and there, but what are some of the best qualities that you think of Bleck and Spoon events specifically? Like, why are players so attracted to them right now? And I mean, really, you're the only tournament series that's consistently getting above 30 entrants. So what do you think makes these events so popular?
Honestly, it's a few things. The first one is consistency. Like, if you enjoyed one BNS, you'll come back and you'll have the same experience the next time. And similarly, if you really didn't like BNS and you hated everything about it, you'll probably still really hate everything about it next time. It's a very kind of static format for the most part. Like I said, we change little things and we try to adjust and accommodate. But for the most part, if you find that, you know, a late night Thursday night tournament isn't for you, then that's fine. But a lot of other teams are kind of in the same boat that, you know, I find myself in. It's like I'm busy throughout the day, but on a random Thursday night, I'm not doing anything in particular. So why not do a tournament? Because oftentimes, I know for me, you know, Saturdays get busy, Sundays get busy. Like, you can want to play in several tournaments and you could have the run of the litter, but sometimes life just doesn't work out that way, especially whenever you're trying to coordinate with three other players. You could have most of your team really able to play, but one has to go do something with their mom that weekend or something along those lines. They have a camp thing, they have a soccer thing, something or other comes up that just makes those Saturday tournaments hard, whereas Thursday nights, no one's doing anything on Thursday nights. So it makes it attractive. The other thing is that, and this is the case not just for BNS, but really anything across the board, numbers beget numbers. Once you start seeing, you know, that entry amount creep up, and you maintain that and it keeps creeping up a little bit, it starts having like an exponential growth kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Where, well, not quite exponential, that'd get a little crazy, but you get more consistent growth faster kind of deal,
right?
Where you know, you could have the exact same format that we would have, you could carbon copy everything we do for BNS and run it on Wednesday nights or Tuesday nights or Monday nights, and you'd start small. Mm-hmm. Like this is usually how it happens. And the more you keep doing it, the more you keep building on it, the more you start building that rapport with players who have come into it, you'll start seeing that same kind of growth. And it really applies to anything. It's just that we have that level of consistency about us.
Yeah. So obviously one thing we've started to see a little more with the more recent iterations of BNS is you're starting to introduce this donation prize pool idea. And it seems like it's working out quite well. Do you think, like, how much of an impact do you think that idea of, oh, there is a prize pool at the end of this, how much do you think that's kind of attributed to your numbers increase? Or do you think it's a little less so, a little, like, does it kind of have more of an influence than we might think?
I would be remiss to think that it doesn't have any influence.
Like, well, of course.
It clearly is having something. When the moment you start introducing a few dollars and it just starts going up very quickly, it's like, all right.
Right.
Even in many cases where we just say, like, the prize pool's $50. Like, that's where we're starting. Like, when teams sign up, that is at least as much as you can get, which breaks down to a little bit more than $10 a person for first place, which is a bit of a gamble and definitely not something that I would see teams necessarily, you know, chomping at the bit in order to get at.
Right.
But I think at the same time, the mysteriousness, like, well, it could be more.
Yeah.
So you could, it has that, like, gambling factor without you having to put anything into it. That little bit of adrenaline rush that's like, all right, we're going into this at 50, but teams have walked away with almost $50 each.
Yeah. All right, so one last question, specific question I kind of have for you. One thing we've kind of noticed, I mean, one thing that, like, is the staple of BNS, if you have to say anything, it's the couch what you like to call couch commentary, where you just have a bunch of people on the mic, sitting down, watching Splatoon, maybe talking about the game, probably
if we're
not.
Lucky, yeah.
If we're lucky, probably not talking about the game. So what exactly is the decision making or the philosophy behind let's just have a good time with this versus, you know, trying to push and show the best, you know, Splatoon we can? What's kind of the philosophy behind just laying back, kicking back, and enjoying ourselves a little bit?
There's a few things behind it. One of the first things that and the same reason why we did it back whenever we first started BNS is it was essentially something we did for fun. And ultimately, whenever you're doing a Twitch stream, regardless of whatever your content is, it's entertainment. You want it to be entertaining. And that can come in many, many flavors. And of course, we could go the full gambit of hardcore commentary and, like, really strive for, like, the best and greatest that we could. But that's really hard to find every week on Thursday.
Especially at what, like, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning?
Especially whenever the sleep fatigue starts setting in, you start getting a little tired and a little bit goofy, because it's late at night for you. You've been talking for several hours. It's invariably, it gets a little loose, even if we had the best of the best come out. It's just the nature of it. It's just kind of how people are. So instead of kind of trying to shoehorn into that, and that's already a very uphill battle, it's hard enough getting, you know, teams to sign up, let alone trying to find dedicated commentators who are really going to take it seriously, whereas it's really easy to find people who are more relaxed and they know plenty about Splatoon. Like, it's not like we're just picking anyone off the street. A lot of these players that we have come on are, you know, they have those little, you know, nuggets of brilliant insight that will shine up through all of the memes and the silliness on occasion.
Somehow.
Which is
on occasion.
Somehow the stars align. And actual great commentary will like speed in for a few seconds. But the other thing is that in general, we are trying to encourage more commentators because we obviously love Nine Whole Grains. Nine Whole Grains is absolutely fantastic. He is the poster child for everything that is good and wholesome in the Splatoon community.
Right.
And if we had the ability, we would clone 9,000 Nine Whole Grains to 9,000 Whole Grains.
9,000
Whole Grains. Just lift this community and carry it to new heights. But until that day comes and the technology gets to that point, we have to kind of start homegrowing commentators. And the one thing that I notice most often in doing, again, Young Ink and Squid Boards is that bringing in new commentators had a very strong chance of being mic shy, I guess. Not quite when they get into that situation of where they're not quite used to talking for long periods of time and necessarily being able to talk about nothing while seeming like they're not talking about nothing. Like, yeah. It's a hard skill in of itself, and it's the kind of thing that like any successful Twitch streamer basically has down pat, and it's something that, you know, I've certainly noticed whenever I'm trying to fill other commentator roles, is like I'll tend to lean towards more people who have a lot of mic experience, because once you're comfortable behind the mic, sharing your knowledge of Splatoon is fairly easy. And then the next step from there is trying to make your ideas more concise and then flowing with someone else. But as a whole, for the commentary sub community of our community, that we're not quite there yet. We don't quite have enough of a pool of commentators who are just plainly comfortable behind the mics. Yeah. So a lot of commentators who, you know, say I'm interested in commentating, coming to BNS. It doesn't matter if you're necessarily have good insight or you know how to flow with people. It's a great chance essentially just to get behind a microphone and talk with other people about Splatoon and have that same kind of safety net of, well, if I don't have something to say, there's someone else who can.
Right.
And it's a bit more so than whenever there's just two people, because I'm sure you've seen it in tournament streams where sometimes there's just like that awkward pregnant pause.
Oh,
or both commentators don't quite know what to fit in that particular situation, but then they say something, it picks up, and it's fine. But then almost a few minutes later, the same kind of situation will happen. Both will end their thoughts at the same time and don't quite have that same fill. Whereas you see situations like with Zach and Nine Whole Grains, you don't really have those pauses, or if that pause exists, it's because they're directing it for that. There's usually purpose driven into those pauses. It's not that same awkward feeling. It's like, why aren't they talking? Did the mics cut out? So that's another big factor, and a lot of reasons why I'm more than happy to bring in new commentators, put them into BNS, and it's a great chance to just get used to talking. And then from there, you kind of get that feel, you get that extra confidence boost. You can then go on and do other tournaments, and you already know. It's like, all right, I've already, you know, talked with a bunch of goofballs for 5 hours. I can handle serious commentary with one person easily for a couple hours.
Right. Well, the growth that BNS has seen recently has truly been something special to watch from the sidelines. So, round of applause to everything that you guys do over there. Is there anything else that you'd like the listeners of this podcast to know about your event? Or Ink TV in general, I suppose.
Be on the lookout. We are trying to kick off a few more serious events, so that way people don't just think that we only do the silly BNS stuff. So they are coming. We do have our first event on the 21st that's targeting free agents. I believe we'll get a lot of that details out. I don't know whenever this podcast goes out, but tomorrow, the 10th. Sometime on the 10th, we'll have a lot more details about that coming out.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to join me. And good luck this Thursday.
All right, thank you.
As a reminder, Bleck and Spoon is hosted every Thursday night at 8 p.m. EDT, and their solo entry tournament is on July 21st. More information on everything Ink TV related can be found at inktv.media. That's it for this week's episode of the Weekly Splat. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to take a breather for a moment. Whew. Thanks for sticking around and listening to the whole thing. Everything that's been talked about today will be linked in the podcast description, so if you're interested to find out more and anything I've talked about, go be sure to check that out. If you've liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and follow me on Twitter for consistent updates at kbot_273. If you have any feedback, feel free to message me on there as well. The Weekly Splat works in tandem with Ecofeed, as both products aim to keep you, Splatoon players, informed of the competitive community. If you're not already following Ecofeed on Twitter, I suggest you do to stay up to date on the most recent competitive Splatoon news. Don't forget, Submit your favorite part of the Inkstorm Cup to me via the Anchor mobile app or by sending clips of no longer than a minute of you talking to ikafeedsblat@gmail.com, and you might just appear on next week's episode. Thanks again for listening, cephalopods, and happy splatting.